Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, what's up there, Surf Splendor podcast listeners? Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, David Scales, as always, of course, and we're thrilled to have you back. I hope that you enjoyed last week's episode with Peter King talking about tour notes. I really enjoyed Peter. We got good feedback about Peter. He recently moved in about a mile from me, so we're neighbors now, and he's out of town often, as you heard him talk about in that interview, but I'm hoping that when he is in town that, you know, we can do this more often and get updates on tour notes. But I think he's just an interesting dude to just have chime in on things. Tony Roberts, the photographer who we've done a couple episodes with, commented on Facebook that, you know, is there anyone more connected and more candid than Peter King? And I think that's a great point. There's a lot of guys who are connected, of course, but not a lot that are as candid, but also as tactful and respectful, I think, as Peter is. So, you know, people don't mind allowing him to get close because he never really reveals anything that's inappropriate, but the things that he reveals are always insightful. And that's, of course, the success of tour notes and a lot of what we talked about in that episode. You can also look forward next week. I have an interview with Todd Glazer, who's a surf photographer, and I don't know how closely you pay attention to photographers' credits on images. He works mainly for Surfer Mag, but does a lot of work with other brands and then travels a lot with Kelly Slater specifically. And so Todd's work, I guarantee that you've seen. And really interesting interview with Todd, talking a lot about, you know, photography itself, but also just interesting insight into Kelly and a lot of those top level athletes. Todd was in the water when Kelly did that 540 in Portugal. He was actually on that trip with Kelly specifically. So he was shooting the whole, you know, shooting with Kelly daily, basically. And Peter King, last week's episode, was on the beach filming the beach angle of that move. And Todd was in the water shooting water photos and actually missed Kelly's 540 because he was slightly out of position. And he had a lens that, you know, he had a fisheye lens, which wouldn't have served that type of a maneuver very well anyways, unless he was right underneath it. But, you know, Todd talks about that maneuver and that day and everything that surrounds it. So look forward to that interview next week. I'm going to read a tweet really quickly from at XZolian. Says, Surf Splendor. Is the show called Surf Splendor or Down the Line? Love the show. Just confused what to call it. That is a great point. Thank you for that tweet. We have mentioned the partnership a lot early on, but I don't think we've really revisited it probably for a year or so. And I know that we have new listeners since then. So it's definitely worth restating. And basically, the short story is I started Surf Splendor podcast about a year and a half ago. And the goal was just to do conversations about surfing with people within the industry, basically. And a couple episodes in, I realized that there was a need to do kind of a current topic show, like a surf news, if you will. And Scott Bass has been doing a show called Down the Line since 2006, or maybe it was 2005. And it began on terrestrial radio in San Diego, and then was a podcast with Surfer Magazine for a while when he worked there. So it's taken shape in a number of different platforms, but he's been doing it pretty consistently for 9 years. And so I knew that he had that going on in San Diego, and he had gone through a number of co-hosts and currently had no co-host. And so he was wavering on consistency. And I had an ambition to do something consistently and thought that I might be able to, you know, fill in as his co-host, and I could hopefully glean some of his listenership and he would benefit from my consistency. And so I contacted him, and that's kind of what has happened is we actually record the show simultaneously. He continues to publish it under his Down the Line radio title as a podcast. And I basically simulcast this show under my Surf Splendor header. And so obviously there's no revenue involved with either show. It's just kind of a way that I don't want to wrench creative control from him. And it's something that he's done really well for a long time. And I admire that, and I'm reverent towards it. And at the same time, he doesn't want to ask me to come co-host for free. So I guess, you know, the amicable division is just that we both record separately. We both simulcast our own version of it. But 100% of his show nowadays is co-hosted by me, and you can find it here on Surf Splendor. Surf Splendor, on the other hand, in the off weeks from Down the Line, we do these profile pieces. Like I said, last week was with Peter King, next week's with Todd Glazer. So it's kind of like 2 weeks in the month are profile pieces, and 2 weeks in the month are surf news pieces, and we just alternate weeks. So I don't know if that's a super confusing explanation or not, but that's as best as I could do. So hopefully that makes sense to you, and I hope that you enjoy both formats. We've gotten really only positive feedback about the alternating formats. I think one person at one point said that they don't like teasing apart the two, but there's nothing really to tease apart, you know? It all exists on Surf Splendor, but if you like Scott, if you like to continue to download Scott's thing, you can get it there, of course, at Down the Line Radio. I've always been a fan of that. So whatever you find it, as long as you're listening, I suppose that's all that matters. So thanks for listening. Without further ado, I lead you into today's show, and I'll be back at the end of the show to sign us off. Thanks for listening.
My God, best song ever right there, Powderfinger, Neil Young. It's November 17th. It's a Monday. You're listening to Down the Line Surf Talk Radio. David Lee Scales. I'm Scott Bass, and we've got a lot to talk about. But David, first, your thoughts on Powderfinger, Neil Young, and Crazy Horse. Is it the best song ever?
It's one of Neil Young's best songs ever, that's for sure. And I am a Neil Young fan. It's not my favorite track personally, but I think it's obvious. I mean, it's a great track, no question about it. Do you follow what he's doing now with like the audio digital world?
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool.
Pono is his deal?
Yeah, it's really a cool thing.
Are you going to get one?
I don't know. You know, his whole thing is, look, it's not for everybody. You know,
for Scott Bass?
It could be.
Yeah.
I'm sort of, the reason I'm hesitant is because I've got so much technology in my life already. I'm a little bit hesitant to sign up for more technology, you know?
Yeah.
But the idea behind it, in case the listeners don't know, and you probably know a lot about it too, is it's basically his way of making the listening experience more robust by bringing in more sound to the file. Right?
Basically, there's more information in his audio file.
Right.
Like
a 1 meg song might be a 2 gig song.
Exactly.
For him.
Yeah.
Right.
He says the way that...
Better than an LP. Better than vinyl, I should say.
The way that MP3s are rendered, you know,
they're just compressed to hell, and exactly. They lose a lot of the sound, a lot of the love, and yeah.
He's like, if you like my music and you've only heard it on MP3, you know, through iTunes, it's the equivalent of your favorite movie, but you've only seen the trailer of it. You've never actually seen the full film. You've only seen the trailer a bunch of times.
And there's a bunch of, you know, he did sort of the media circuit recently to promote Pono and also his new album that's out. So there's quite a few interviews with Neil Young that you can find on either YouTube. I know Howard Stern did like a 2-hour interview with him.
Oh, wow.
I saw a really good Charlie Rose with him recently. All again on this sort of tour, you know, promotion tour that Neil Young doesn't really do too many of those. So I think it's a big deal for him.
How do you feel about the fact that he's dating Daryl Hannah?
I don't care one way or another. I mean, more power to him. It's none of my business.
He's arguably the ugliest musician of all time. So I think that's a big pull for him.
Who else is ugly out there? The bald guy.
Name a song. I don't know.
I'm having an old man moment, but
Dylan's pretty ugly.
Dylan sounds like you. You might be too young for this. Do you remember the Andy Griffith Show?
Yes.
And do you remember Floyd the Barber?
No.
Well, Floyd the Barber was a character on the Andy Griffith Show, and Bob Dylan sounds just like Floyd the Barber. When Bob Dylan sings, he sounds like Floyd the Barber just talking.
Okay.
Challenge you to go look up some Floyd the Barber.
This will be like the power rankings that you made us do for surf brands.
Yes.
Power rankings.
I didn't make you do them. You didn't even do them. I did them by myself.
Listen, power ranking, ugliest, weirdest voice musician.
Okay.
Because both.
That's a good one.
Because Neil Young, super ugly, super unorthodox voice, you know, squealy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Dylan, also super ugly, really weird voice.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's... I mean, those are one and two right there. I don't think there are any others.
Dylan had a show on Sirius XM Radio. It was really, really good. I don't know the name of it, but it was basically Bob Dylan. He would talk about a song. He would take a theme, like he would say love. And then he would play all songs that either had the word love in it or reflected love to Bob Dylan. And he had this incredible monotone delivery where he would just go, this is Bob Dylan I would butcher it if I tried to do it, but it was pretty fascinating because he just kind of delivers this really like, you know, just monotone, just like really dead kind of delivery with no emotion.
I hope he wasn't only playing his songs.
No, he was playing all sorts of cool stuff. Good. It was really fascinating, but the good stuff wasn't really the music. It was what he was saying.
Yeah, of course.
Between the songs, which was really fascinating.
Have I ever told you about Henry Rollins' show that he does on KCRW?
No, but it must be good because he's pretty opinionated.
He's really interesting, dude. And I bring it up because listeners could actually find it on kcrw.com. They archive everything there.
Yeah.
Henry Rollins has a couple hour show on Saturday nights. And he's interesting, of course, to hear talk. But he'll do stuff like he'll play songs that you might have heard before. But then he'll go, all right, for this next track, this comes off the B-side of a cassette tape. Back when Black Flag and I were playing in 1988 in Chicago, blah, blah, blah. I received this tape from a fan who walked up after the show, walked up on stage and gave this to me of him and his buddies playing in their garage. This is track number 3 off the B-side off that album. It's like, what? He doesn't know the name of the band or anything. It's just a demo tape from 88 that he got, you know? So really cool, interesting stuff like that. And the music is fine. Sometimes it's good.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to hear his take on music, you know, and hear him talk. So.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I mean, I haven't heard a whole lot of stuff, but occasionally on the internet, somebody'll post something about, you know, that Henry Rollins said about some topic that is, you know, rather polarizing. Mm-hmm. And you're sometimes surprised by the stance that Henry Rollins takes.
Oh, yeah. He's a cool dude for sure.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Dylan or Neil Young play?
I've seen Neil Young live.
Have you?
I have, yeah. At the San Diego Sports Arena, probably like 91 or something like that.
Was it good? No.
I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a feeling, like I saw Dylan with my dad a couple years ago and it was not good. But, you know, I love Dylan so much and I love Neil Young too, but it just like...
And, you know, it's not that the reason I don't remember isn't that I was like blotto, but it's that I was so caught up in my disease of going to get blotto like... It wasn't the focus of my evening.
Got it.
What I mean?
You were just looking
and
for
I've
a vehicle
let out
to go.
Way too much information.
Sure,
I don't
want
you to go any further than that.
No, that's fine. Daryl Hannah, by the way, not aged so gracefully.
Well, so there you go. Two ugly people. What's the big surprise?
I mean, definitely better than Neil Young has or ever was, but still it's like, what? That's Daryl Hannah? Yikes.
This other ugly singer has just been on the tip of my tongue. It's going to come out at one point during the show. I'm going to remember who the guy is.
Final note on
Pumpkin, Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, Billy Corgan.
Yeah, Billy Corgan. He's an ugly dude.
Yeah, not on par with the other two guys though.
Give him time. He's only what, 40?
Yeah, that's true. Last kind of thing about music before we get into surfing.
Yes.
Bob Dylan, there's a biopic made about him a number of years ago called I'm Not There.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that?
No.
Highly recommended. I loved it. They had five different actors playing Dylan, from Richard Gere to Cate Blanchett, actually.
Radical.
Playing his kind of late 60s,
I can see you with like a bottle of Pinot and your wife, and you're watching this biopic on Dylan. It's also artsy, David.
My wife hates it, but I think it's fantastic.
Pinot or the movie?
The movie. Perfect. Most movies that I like, she's not a fan of. At any rate, we got to catch up from our last show. Dorian Doc Paskowitz, who was our Duke, passed away since we last spoke.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to my wife about this morning. She goes, oh, you're going to talk about Dorian? And I was like, yeah, maybe. We sort of talked about it last week. But yeah, he passed away, very sad, but he lived a long, full life. And, David and I would both highly recommend you watch the documentary Surf Wise. It's a story of the Paskowitz clan. And the thing that's fascinating about Surf Wise is, you know, in the next, week and a half or 2 weeks, you're going to see a lot of great stuff written about Dorian Paskowitz, and it's all quite flowery, and as it should be, because he just passed away. But there certainly is a dark side to the Paskowitz clan and to the patriarch known as Doc Paskowitz, and this movie sort of excavates that. You know, some of the stuff he did, there's some drama around the family life there that makes the movie very much worth watching.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing was, we were talking about the Titans of Mavericks event.
Yes.
And
Peter Mel, right?
Peter
didn't get an invitation to that.
And talking about how Steve Coletta was named the head judge, and we were just kind of wondering about we both love Steve and think he's a fantastic dude and amazing shaper and all that, but we were wondering what his judging credentials were. I got a text message from my buddy Eric Kramer, who was an ASP judge for 10 years, and he said through the 80s and 90s, Coletta was one of the best judges from California on the Bud Tour and ASP North America level. And there's not a lot of complexity to the big wave criteria. It's basically just comparisons and separations around commitment and degree of difficulty. Also, Steve Coletta's son was judging for a while on the ASP North America in the early 2000s.
Cool. So Kalu Coletta.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Titans of Mavericks, I also have an update in regard to that. You know, interestingly, John Florence has been invited to that. And there's been some speculation over whether he's allowed to even do that because he's an ASP surfer and this is a non-ASP sanctioned event. And, the waiting period for the Titans of Mavericks is January 1 to March 31. So the season really kicks off at Snapper Rocks right around that last week in March. It could very well start in April. So you could argue that, hey, he's not even, there's no conflict here with an ASP event, which is one of the bylaws. Somebody posted some of the bylaws. I don't know if you saw this in regards to what the ASP will allow, will not allow. And it says that the ASP shall not be It shall not be reasonable to refuse a surfer's application for a waiver. In other words, we'll let you surf in this event. However, it has to be an exempt event whose dates do not conflict with the WCT. So you and I have just clarified that it doesn't seem as if there's a date conflict. And B, any other event whose dates do not conflict with an event window or a WCT event, or 7 days before or after that event window, which does not in any substantive and material way compete with the ASP or WCT event. So it seems as if you could argue that, look, he's free to surf in the Titans of Mavericks if he gets the waiver. Of course, behind all of that is, would John even put the ASP to the task? I mean, what is the ASP going to do? They're going to say, no, you can't surf on the tour. That would be silly, right? That would be taking one of the stars away.
Right.
But Skin Dog Collins pointed out, hey, it's kind of gnarly to surf Mavericks. I mean, you could ruin yourself and your career, at least a year of it, by blowing out a knee or a back or a shoulder or whatever. It happens all the time out there. And it's not like John Florence is surfing out there a lot.
And with if that were to happen and he were to apply for an injury wild card and the ASP had multiple applications for that, I wonder if they would frown upon the fact that he was injured doing an alternative event. You know, whereas if there's a guy like Tiago last year who got injured during the CT season, they're more likely to give it to him maybe. Even though Tiago's not as much of a marquee surfer, of course, that comes in. But I just wonder how they would hash out those details.
Yeah, it would be interesting. You know, it'd be hard to say no to John Florence.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Just it's just a stupid marketing move to not, you know, if all of these things played out that way. One interesting thing, though, if they didn't grant John Florence a waiver and he surfed in it anyway, the actual fine from the ASP is all of his prize money.
Whoa.
A $250,000 fine, loss of seeding rank, and the ability to surf the tour next year.
Whoa.
That's how heavy the punishment is.
Crazy.
Yeah. So they make sure that you don't take this lightly.
That's insane. I mean, John, that's still not a drop. It's a drop in the bucket for him in terms of what he makes in a year, but still.
And the bad PR that would, you know, out of this would be huge. But it also brings us back to the start of this. Like, you want some good PR, let Peter Mel surf in this event.
Right.
Like, this is kind of like, you know, growing the pond type of thing. Don't be so paranoid about it.
Right.
Let him surf in it. It's good for the Big Wave World Tour. I know it's not a part of that. But to have the commissioner surf at, you know, what could arguably be called, you know, quote unquote, his spot.
Mm-hmm.
It would be silly not to have him do it.
And yeah,
it's an and unfortunate. Everyone that you talk to goes, oh, that's lame.
Right.
You know, so the oh, that's lame quotient is rather high.
Well, I'd like to point out one correction. You said that the Snapper event kicks off at the end of March. It actually, this year's event kicked off March 1st.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Absolutely. It's usually the end of February.
Right.
Yeah.
So there could be more overlap than, you know, more cause for concern, basically.
But you got to figure John's probably not going to do it based on what you just said about the dates and about the injury factor and, you know, his circle, his posse of people going, you know what, John, you know, do Piahi, do the Eddie. You don't need to do Mavericks and you're good. So if that's the case, then you're looking at more wild cards.
Right. I would love to see him do Mavericks personally.
I would too.
Yeah.
And Kelly did it. And I was out there the one time Kelly would, I want to say, I don't know if Kelly's won Mavericks. I know.
I don't think he has.
The one year he maybe did it, Flea won for the third consecutive year. And it was pretty incredible, but it was, you know, it was pretty neat to see Kelly step up and absolutely, you know, I don't want to say dominate, but surfed as good as any of the Mavericks regulars.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure, what John would do.
Yeah, you get that feeling from John. From the little we've seen him surf big waves, he seems completely comfortable and natural at it. Were you watching that event in the channel on a boat?
Yeah. I was on that big Huli boat, that big, I don't know what it's called, the Huli Cat or something like that.
I don't know, but how was it?
It was neat. It was exciting. You know, I was working for Surfer Magazine at the time in an editorial capacity for their, you know, I was the editorial director for their online stuff. So it was killer. It was fun.
I was
hanging out with Bill Sharp all day.
I've never been to a big wave spot like that.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious how gnarly it really is, you know, like compared to when your local spot gets massive and like, you know, it might be comparable in terms of number of feet, but how much gnarlier is Mavericks? Even if it's, you know, 20 feet and you've seen certain other spots 20 feet, how much gnarlier?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's very much gnarlier. It's incredible. Yeah. But what
like
happens,
exponentially gnarlier?
Yeah, thank you. Exponentially gnarlier. What happens when you're out there, those, you know, the first hour you're blown away. And then like any other spot that, you know, you're sitting and watching, you get sort of, you know, there's a certain sense of like malaise that you just kind of get used to it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, there's another 25 footer, you know, and it's,
right.
And it's horrendous and breaking bones and it's magnificent. But you know, after hour four, you're like, yeah, there goes another one. You know,
yeah.
you get sort of used to it.
Right. Until you paddle out.
But well, I was, and then on top of that, nothing compares to actually being out there. And I've never done that.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact, just from surfing Todos and stuff that it's very hard to take the experience and be able to convey it to an audience that isn't an enthusiast and isn't a real participant in the sport. It's pretty mind-blowing how powerful it is.
How big have you surfed Todos?
Not super huge, maybe 15 to 20.
Okay.
You know, not like mega big.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. I got a follow-up about a couple of shows ago. I called CJ Hobgood the kook because he dismounted off a wave and landed on that rock in Portugal. Do you remember that video? He hurt his foot afterwards.
That's what that I was separate. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But do you remember that video of him hitting the rock?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, a really traumatic wipeout. Like, basically, Felipe Toledo was out in the water, and he was telling CJ to try an air. So on the next wave, CJ got this wave, did an air, and landed, and then claimed it looking back at Felipe without looking forward at the rock that was, sticking out of the water 5 feet. So he actually hit that rock, and we joked about it and laughed about it, and that was all that was said. Well, it turns out ASP did an injury update on him because a couple days afterwards, he sliced his foot open pretty badly and had to miss the rest of the event. In that injury update, they talked about him hitting the rock in addition to the foot slice. Turns out he got a concussion. He had headaches for 5 days after that.
Wow.
Like pretty significant headaches.
Yeah.
To where he was really concerned about missing the event due to the headaches. But what ended up happening was he went out for a free surf on the day of the event prior to his heat and was pulling into a closeout barrel, jumped off his board in kind of the tumult of that, the fin of his board sliced his foot open, forcing him to withdraw from the event and actually forcing him to withdraw from the Haleiwa event. And he says that he's still in it for Sunset and Pipe. You know, it'll remain to be seen if he's actually recovered in time. But the recovery is due to his foot injury more than it is the concussion. But I thought it was worth noting that he did sustain a concussion from that rock.
Wow, that is interesting. Yeah, that's, where did you dig that up?
ASPWorldTour.com basically did an injury update that they posted. And then for the record, he's actually ranked 23rd on the CT, which is just out of qualification. He'll need to do well at Pipe to requalify, and he's not even in the top 50 of the QS. So he's strictly relying on his CT ranking.
Yeah, isn't he 23rd?
23rd, so one spot out.
Yeah, sorry, I'm sure that's what you said. I was looking at something else.
No,
that's
cool. What were you looking at?
Tom Curran, because, if it's okay, let's just break. I do have a whole segment on qualification for 2015, which I think is really
I've got important. All that too. Let's follow that. I mean, do that with the Triple Crown. If you want to talk Tom Curran first.
Tom Curran. One of the, it's interesting, all these things sort of segue. So I'll just say, look, I wanted to start with the Reef Hawaiian Pro and then follow that with qualification stuff.
Yeah, whatever you want, go for it. I got it.
So obviously Dusty Payne, incredible performance. The entire webcast was really entertaining. I thought they did a great job. And it was just a great contest from gnarly, unruly first day action to Ola's 10 to just there seemed to be a lot of waves ridden and it seemed to be nonstop action. And
this is what we wait for all year. Everybody talks about Hawaii and throughout the year compares other things to Hawaii. We're in Hawaii now. And if you did not watch this event, you blew it. Like this is what it all comes down to. And it delivered. It over-delivered. Like, the surfing from the early rounds was on par with CT surfing. The waves were better than most CT events that we saw this year. It was just like a phenomenal event from beginning to end. And guys surfing incredibly well whose names you don't know and we might not ever even see again. Guys from Portugal and like all over the world, you know, Brazil. Standout surfers for the event. You mentioned Dusty. It was phenomenal to see Dusty back in form. Dusty's, you know, produced some of the most prolific free surf segments that we've seen in surf videos, but he's been injured a lot. And really, he was on CT, but got kicked off because of an injury. It was great to see him back in form. It was great to see Julian Wilson back in form, battling it out in the final. I loved Connor Coffin, Zeke Lau, Poncho Sullivan, Tori Meister. Carry on.
Well, all of those guys. And you know, the thing about Dusty is that, you know, if you didn't do a double take, you would think that, you know, it was Julian or Josh Kerr without the flicky style, or he just looked so he just looked right. Like Dusty Payne looked like he was a fifth seat on the CT. He looked so CT worthy.
Right.
And so fast and so powerful. And he had it all, and he looked comfortable doing it. It was like a combination of Julian and Seabass, and he just looked great. And I had written Dusty Payne off after his injury, and it's really neat to see a guy. What I really sensed about Dusty Payne was, here's a guy who was injured, off the tour, really had to rehab, really had to work hard, and he's actually making something of his second chance. Right. He's like, oh no, this is it. And you really get the sense that he's not going to let his second chance go by the wayside. He's going to make the most of it. He's going to work hard. He obviously has.
I would argue this is a third chance, because
there you go.
He came back from his injury prematurely. I don't know if you remember at Lowers, I think it was a year ago, and re-injured his knee, which put him out for a whole nother year. And the doctor said, don't go back and do that Lowers event. And he's like, no, I really want to. I think I'm ready. And, he made the wrong decision. So, and I would argue this wasn't even a third chance for him. This was not even he wasn't even supposed to, like...
He was a round one surfer.
Yeah. So he jumped basically 72 spots in the QS rankings. That's how low he was on the QS. He's not even in contention to requalify, or he wasn't prior to this.
Yeah.
So he was just doing it because he's Hawaiian and he's in Hawaii and he's feeling good. It wasn't a bid to get on the CT.
Well, there's a video clip that just came out where he and Julian went somewhere, probably to Indo or something, and they're just boosting airs, and they're just looking so comfortable, and they're just ripping in this free surfing segment. I think you maybe even featured it as one of your must-see moments. I don't know. But
we talked about it. It was Swamp Duck is the name.
Yeah, exactly. Swamp Duck. I put it on my website. It's insane. And he transferred that type of surfing to a competitive situation with a jersey on, and just to go back to the Reef Hawaiian Pro in general, those guys put on an incredible aerial performance out there, and Dusty was one of them. But you got to talk about Julian Wilson here. The final was got to be upsetting for Julian. I had him winning the thing. I mean, I had, of course, we all had him winning about 15 minutes in, but I didn't think there was any chance for anybody to come back.
He had Dusty comboed with
all of them.
Left.
Yeah.
With a couple of nines, basically. And then Dusty got two waves in a minute and a half and comboed the rest of the field at that point. Got a high nine and then another high nine within a minute and a half. And the second one was right in front of Julian paddling out. It was incredible. It was the best final I've seen maybe since Pipe last year. Just really incredible surfing. A couple of other World Tour standouts. Rayoni Monteiro, who hasn't won a heat all year, looked phenomenal. I don't know where he came from.
That's just standard Rayoni,
Like it is.
You see him occasionally once a year, all of a sudden you're like, God, that guy's kind of ripping.
I know. He won the Sunset event in 2010 looking like that. And then maybe put in one performance since then, the Bells event that he beat Parco.
It's like
Kelly.
If his back's to the wall, he'll give you that performance. Right. But if he's just rolling through another season on the CT, it's like, okay, another 33rd.
Exactly. Another guy who does that and who is re-qualified via the Triple Crown previously is Adam Melling, who was in the final.
Adam Melling looks so sharp and so incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of guys looked really, really tight. But Melling was one of them.
Melling, those are the CT guys who have been nowhere all year long and then just showed up. And then, of course, Brett Simpson, who I have to mention because we're hometown buddies. And Sippo re-qualified based on this result, basically.
Yeah. And he surfed great. And it was just an incredible event. I mean, it seemed like every heat was packed with action, was packed with moments, buzzer beater moments at the end of the heat.
Yep. Every heat.
What I was going to say about Dusty and sort of like his third chance, and it seems as if he's taking advantage of it. And maybe I'm assuming a lot here because you're kind of saying, he's just there anyway. He was just surfing. It's not like he's going at it. In fact, I think he said as much as he just wants to be able to qualify to surf in the primes next
year. He's looking at 2016.
Now all of a sudden we've got an incredible story playing out for us in front of us with Dusty Payne. There's guys that have been given a second chance, and maybe it was a little too late in their career, and maybe in the early parts of their career they partied it off I want to say Taj. I know Taj has had an incredible career. But you get the sense that he should have been a world champion, and he wasn't. And then all of a sudden, he's like, I still have a chance. And Mick Fanning and Parco and Slater got in his way here the last 4 or 5 years or whatever it's been. And then you think of guys like Aki and Sonny Garcia, who both had a second chance at a world title. Slater was off tour on hiatus, and they took advantage of that, and they both got their world championships. Then you look at a guy like Nathan Hedgehog, you're like, oh, he's 35. He's got his life rearranged. He's focused on the right things. He's, you know, healthy. He's psyched. Look at him go. He's ripping. Probably a little too late for Hedge.
For sure it is.
And so it's neat to see a guy like Dusty, who I'm guessing is probably around 26, 28 years old, plenty of time still left and for him to, you just get the sense that he's focused, that those two times off tour where he was hurt, he had a lot of time to think about it.
Multiple years.
And so he's like, you know what? It's on.
I fully agree. And you brought up a couple of points that I'd like to kind of pick apart. This event for me exemplifies the necessity of being well-rounded. On the first day, the swell was pretty much maxing out. They're riding 7.6s, paddling in torrential currents, you know what I mean? Like insane, as Hawaiian as it gets. And then towards the end of the event, they're riding shortboards, and there's a necessity to stomp huge airs if you want to compete with the best guys.
Did you see McFanning do an aerial, by the way? I did see McFanning do an aerial.
Did he?
Yeah, in the semi or in the quarters.
Did he land it?
Yeah, it was just a, you know.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't anything special. It was right. Like one you or I would have
right,
done.
Right, right, right. So, you know, that necessity of being well-rounded, I think, was exemplified in this event. And guys like Nathan Hedge, as much as we root for him, it's too little too late because he's not well-rounded anymore. Back in the day, you could rely on that backhand attack to get you through most events. But now it's like, dude, yeah, that'll get you through a couple rounds when the waves are big. But look at the airs that Dusty and Julian did. They were on par with anything Felipe did in Brazil at a 1 foot beach break, yet it was head high, Holly Eva. I mean, that's insane, you know?
The aerial that wasn't made is the aerial that everyone's talking about. It was just incredible. Julian Wilson.
Full front side air reverse, full rotation air was unbelievable.
It was so high in the air and. He landed it. He just caught his rail coming into the little bowl there at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, he had almost ready to claim it. That's how much, you know, how far along in the landing process he had gotten. You know,
it was a 95%er, dude.
It was.
5% more would have stuck it.
Many of us were like, just give it to him.
Yeah, no, you can't. But I felt what I loved about that air too is that he had telegraphed it and had so much speed. So, you know, he has to go for it. It's like everything's hinging on this and you're waiting for it, waiting. And then he actually did it with a greater kind of height and loft than you even expected with all that speed.
Well, because he telegraphed it, you really better do something special telegraphed it. You know, and Peter Mell made mention of that in the commentating. He's like, we all knew it was going to happen and he did more than we had expected,
right.
You know, from him there.
Which is shocking. Yeah. How do you over-deliver on what we're already expecting is going to be amazing, you know?
And he sort of had to.
Another thing about Hedgy is he is on the bubble to re-qualify and everybody's rooting for him. And Red Bull's doing a series that's partially dedicated to him called Qualifying. And in his heat, I didn't write down which heat it was. I think it was in round three. He needed a 7.21 and he exited the water with 2.5 minutes to go. He had completed He completed a wave and he ended up getting a 6.2 on it. And I don't know if he thought that wave would have been enough, but regardless, it was a questionable score and he shouldn't have come in. He exited the water needing a 7.21. So you look at that lapse in judgment on his behalf and you go, dude, it's the end of the season. You're on the bubble. This is, like you put it, your third chance or second chance. What are you doing? That's a horrible lapse in judgment. You're not going to get many more of these chances. And secondly, this is not what it takes to be a champ or to even be on tour. You need to grind it out. You're never going to have decisions go your way. You need to pound the door down to get back on tour. And if you're not pounding the door down, then why should I root for you? Because there's 100 other guys who are begging to be let in.
So you lost a little Hedgy mojo there because of that.
For sure I did.
Okay, here's the classic guy. You know, we're talking about Dusty coming back from injury. He's round one all the way to champion. Well, the reason I was looking up Tom Curran, in 1990, Tom Curran did that the entire year. He had to surf the trials in every single event just to get into the main event. That year, 1990, he surfed the trials and became the world champion.
Unbelievable.
So just think about Dusty times 12. That's what Tom Curran did.
Crazy.
Isn't that cool?
Was that the first title he won?
No, it was his last one.
So why?
He won 85, 86, and then he did 90.
Oh, so he took a few years off and that's why he had to surf.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a story that doesn't get told much for whatever reason. That time period is sort of that period where there wasn't a lot of media going on. You know, I think Alan Gibby has a movie out called From Trials to Champion or something, and it's on VHS or whatever. You know, it's hard to come by.
Yeah.
But totally. It's an interesting story and one that's not told very often.
Well, the requalification story is something that we definitely should devote a little bit of time to.
Let me just say this about that. I'm glad you brought this up. I'm going to start off the segment, if I can, regarding qualification for the WCT in 2015. I think it's of utmost importance for the ASP production people for the narrative of the Vans World Cup to be all about the qualification process and each and every surfer. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir and I know I'm also stating the obvious. Of course, they need to do that, but I think they need to up their game. I think before each heat, we need to know where each of those four guys stands as we see these heats at Sunset Beach unfold, if it's relevant to the conversation. But I think, and I sent my friend Jeff Doner a Facebook message basically saying, hey, wouldn't it be neat if you guys upped your graphics package a little bit so we had more to look at, more to decipher, more to excavate, more to digest regarding the qualification process? That narrative needs to drive the entire webcast. Of course, notwithstanding the actual competition and the waves at Sunset Beach that are unfolding before our eyes. But, you know, behind that and on top of that and sort of dressing that needs to be all of these stories that are of a great importance to you and I as surf fans and to the ASP, as far as, you know, if somebody comes out of the woodwork, certainly you're going to want to tell that story going into Australia in the beginning of the year. So with that, I'll let you take it from
there. Well, when you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I will play devil's advocate and say that the ASP certainly has
They've done a been better job. I agree. Stories, I'm just saying I want them to up the
right,
game.
Right.
I know they have. I've seen the great stuff Ross Williams put out.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Al Hunt's always there. What I sent to Jeff was, I go, you know what I would love to see? As much like President Obama, I want the ASP to hire a qualification czar, a guy whose sole job, and it's probably going to be Al Hunt, he's the obvious choice, whoever it is, his sole job from today through the end of the Pipeline Masters is to feed the commentators and the production staff as much insight, as much backstory about each one of these guys. Like, build up, you know, don't just tell us that, oh yeah, this guy's on the bubble if he gets through the CD advances. I want to know how he feels about it. I want to see how he's done the whole year, where, how he got to where he's at. Like, give us something to chew on besides just, and a lot of times it's after the heat, you know, they go, oh, by the way, we just found out Dave Stanfield passed me a note. This guy's going to qualify now after, you know, and it's like, how about you could have, you know how much more interest I would have in that heat if you would have told me before this?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm just saying is that they do a good job now. What I'm asking is that they just kind of like ramp up their editorial content package regarding the qualification process. I mean, this event especially is crucial for
that. I would love it if they made Stansfield that guy, took him out of the freaking booth, and made him the stats guy behind the scenes who they toss to chime in maybe for a minute or two in each heat.
That's a great idea. Maybe he is the czar.
Yeah.
You know, and under him, he has a staff who is Al Hunt and who's crunching numbers.
Because I don't need him in the booth and every other heat.
So you've got him split screen with some graphics packages that tell you about what's going on, what needs to happen.
Right.
That's going to feed into the commentary. They're going to do a better job of understanding what's going on. And then you and I are going to be going, oh, guess what? This guy we maybe not really would have cared about is in a heat in 20 minutes.
Right.
And I want to watch it because, for instance, like Seabass. Seabass is, Sebastian Zietz is 22nd on the CT. He has no QS ratings at all.
Right.
He didn't do crap. So for Pipeline, he's going to need a big showing. So we, you know, there's plenty of these backstories that we can tell here.
Well, that's,
Jeremy Flores, go ahead. I know you've done a lot of this excavation.
Well, no, that's what's worth noting is that in previous years or different years, but certainly last season, the QS, there was a one world ranking system. So maybe you didn't do the QS events or you only did some of the QS events, but you were on the world tour and they would accumulate both those points together to help for your requalification. This year, they went to an old system where both tours are separated. So, you know, Seabass being in 22nd, he will qualify in 22nd position. But if he drops to 23rd and he has no, he hasn't requalified on the QS tour on its own, he will get kicked off the CT and replaced by the top 10 surfers who are on the QS event. And now on the QS side, you have surfers like Brett Simpson. Brett Simpson was on the CT this year and he might not qualify, but throughout the year, he's been doing QS events and he was able to garner enough points on the QS, especially based on this Reef Hawaiian Pro event, to have qualified in the top 10 of the QS. So even though he won't requalify on the CT, he will requalify or he will qualify on the QS. All that being said, I talked about Nathan Hedge. He needs to place fifth at Sunset in order to accumulate enough points on the QS to qualify for the CT. That's where he's at. Currently, the top 10 of the QS is first place Matt Banting, which
I don't see Carlos Munoz anywhere on here.
Of course, we're going to take a pause for Matt Banting. When you started this segment and we're like, okay, pause. I need to devote the beginning of this segment to something really important. I thought you were going to say patting David Scales on the back for calling out Matt Banning 2 years ago as being the next CT-er.
Look, we all knew Matt Banning was going to be great.
No, you didn't. I'm going to play a drop from our first episode together where I'm sitting here praising
Matt, who?
Matt Banning and you're
Matt
like,
Matt Wilkinson?
What? I've never heard of that dude. He sucks. There's a million other guys out there who can do air reverses. I'm going to dig up that drop, dude, and I'm going to play it for you.
You can't see this, but I'm turning red with embarrassment because I think David has got me pinned against the wall here. That's true.
Tell me your thoughts on Matt Banning.
I'm stoked when I look at all 10 of these guys. Matt Banning, incredible serve. You know, obviously, when you get to this level, these guys are all great. I want to see these guys. Again, to me, it's about the top 10 on the CT. That's who I think is fascinating because, well, look.
That's not what this conversation's about. We're
okay,
talking about
Matt Banning, congratulations. Let's see how you do. The same way I feel about all of these new rookies that are going to be on tour.
Okay.
Good job. Let's see how you do. Guess what? When you get, you know, Nat Young and Kelly Slater in your heat in round one of Snapper Rocks, let's see how you perform.
I'm glad you chose Nat Young as an example because on his rookie year, he smashed guys.
Well, I just grabbed that. I'm just saying.
It's a perfect example to make my point.
Well, yeah, it is. And maybe Matt will, and that'll be fun to watch, you know.
I think he will. He sat out the Reef Hawaiian Pro because he actually had a really severe cold. But hopefully we'll see him back for the rest of the Hawaii season. Second place is the surfer with my favorite name in the world, Wiggly Dontas. Third place, Adam Melling. Fourth place, kind of an unusual name or an unusual guy we haven't seen that much of is Italo Ferrar, which is a Brazilian goofy footer, does amazing airs.
Another one of those.
Fifth. I mean,
how many are there?
He kind Philippe, of is one of those.
Italo, Gabby,
Jadson. Italo is more along the Jadson side, in my estimation, from what I've seen of him. He's incredible. He's better than Jadson in a lot of ways, but I'm wondering if he will go the way of Jadson.
Italo. So we got four guys that we could basically mix and match, and they're the same dude.
Yeah, Sippo is number six. Keanu Asing, I think, will be an interesting addition to the tour.
That is interesting.
But he could get bumped down based on his number of points. Thomas Hermes is a Brazilian regular footer that is pretty incredible. Short, stocky guy, not unlike Keanu Asing, actually, but a great surfer. Matt Wilkinson is in ninth, and then Jack Freestone is in 10th, which is an interesting guy. Jack's come a long way. He was a junior world champ at one point. He's an incredible surfer. Worth noting, he's dating Alana Blanchard.
That could be his downfall.
Could be. But, I mean, really, he's come a long way in that he had a lot, showcased a lot of power at Holly Eva. Incredible surfer.
Of these 10, so these are the 10 that are going to replace the bottom 10 that are on the tour, the CT now. Of these 10, we still have another CT event at Sunset Beach.
A QS event,
a qualifying event at Sunset Beach. How much will this 10 get shaken up? I mean, we know Matt Banning is qualified.
Basically.
Right? But some of these others, I mean, there's 10 or 15 guys below these guys that could all move into these positions, yeah. Except for what, Matt Banning's spot.
No, not really. It's
somebody
basically
gave
the bottom four.
Bottom four. Okay.
The bottom four of this list I just said, which is Keanu, Thomas Hermes,
they could get replaced.
And Jack Freestone. They're still kind of on the bubble where if they don't make a couple heats and then some of the guys right below them, if they make quarters, you know, and do really well, they can get bumped off.
Like Dusty Payne is 24th.
So Dusty needs basically to make like
he
the
needs
final
a semis,
series.
A semis at Sunset Beach, and he could be replacing Thomas Hermes or Keanu Asing or one of these guys.
And that's the thing. Keanu Asing has a couple, like they take your top five results on the QS, those go into your score line. And Keanu has some low point results in his top five. So hanging on to those low scores can hurt you. If he doesn't replace them with better scores, he's a target for somebody like Ricardo Christy, who is right outside the bubble. But
or Timmy Reyes, speaking Timmy of second Reyes, chances.
If Timmy Reyes does a quarterfinal or Ricardo Christy, and that could better Keanu's spot.
And there's guys like Joanne DeRue who are right there, right? And Jesse Mendez and Charlie Martin. Who is Charlie Martin? Isn't he,
Charlie, I don't need to see on the CT. I mean, talk about guys who... I want to see guys contribute to the CT, and I think Matt Banning could contribute. There's a number of other guys that, they could qualify. Like I said, Nathan Hedge, he could qualify.
I feel that way about a few of these guys, too.
Name them.
Simpo.
Oh, really?
I feel like Simpo's done his best work.
Yeah.
You know? He's won back-to-back home field, U.S. Opens.
Right.
He's been given plenty of opportunities. I don't think he's gotten out of one round two heat this year.
He beat Gabriel in Portugal. Which was, bettered that. And then in
Timmy Reyes, do I really need to see Timmy Reyes again? I mean, he was out there. I gave him good, God bless him. I'm not anti these people. I know they're great surfers.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think that there's some exciting young bloods out there. I'd much rather see Connor Coffin.
Oh, I'd love to see Connor. Who on that list of the top 10 on the QS do you think could contribute to the CT?
Well, I'm not as well versed on the way these guys surf as you are, but, Matt Banning. Wiggly Dontas has been around for a long time. I know Adam Mellon can contribute. I've seen him.
If he fires on all cylinders.
He's been insane. Didn't he do really well at Bells a couple of years ago? I think he made the finals or won it or something.
He made the finals at J-Bay with Jordy 1 year.
And he's also done well at Bells. Maybe the quarter. Anyway, Melling is an exciting surfer. Melling's in that Seabass, Julian, Dusty Payne, really good style, regular foot, tons of speed, and has the air game.
My criticism of Melling, and I love Melling, is how similar he surfs to Mick Fanning. He's a slightly less version of Mick Fanning.
But he's got the air game that Mick doesn't have. He's very fast.
Rarely, though. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, he was busting some airs.
I don't know. He did a couple. It's just like, and I love Melling, and I'm glad to see him do well. I'm just saying, if you're going to be a mini Mick Fanning, you got to be better than Mick Fanning.
You can't be.
You'd rather people say Fanning's a mini Melling. You know what I mean?
That's an interesting point because there's a few guys that are like that, right? I mean, yeah. You look at the four or five goofy foot Brazilians and
yeah, exactly.
They're all mini Gabes. Right. Although some of them, Felipe is his own man, you know?
Yeah, he is for sure.
I don't need to see Jeremy Flores anymore on tour.
Yeah, neither.
I'm kind of over it.
I'd love to see him at Tahiti when he posts two tens and it gets a perfect heat.
He already
and
does
did well
that.
At Pipeline, but that's yeah, all we well, like to see, you know?
I mean, he won pipe when it was down at Aikai, right? Or it was down at Off the Wall. It wasn't even that pipe.
No, he won proper pipe.
Oh, did he?
And he made the final. That was Bede Derbich that won that year. And he made the final against Kieran Perreault at pipe when it was like solid. Travis Logie announced that he's retiring, which I'm sure you're okay with.
I kind of am. The thing I like about Travis Logie is he's kind of a...
spoiler.
Yeah, he kills people. He'll go out and kill... Like, you don't want to go up against him if your world title chances are on the line.
Right.
And he's a great surfer. I mean, they're all great surfers. We keep saying that, but...
Well, along those lines of spoiler, last week I did an interview with Peter King talking about his Tour Notes series.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, look, Julian... Now he's going to requalify, of course, based on this result at the Reef Hawaiian Pro, but he was kind of on the bubble for not requalifying. And what that'll do is pit him against the top seeds next year.
Oh, good.
So you're going to see Julian play spoiler to guys like Kelly and Mick, you know, where those guys normally have a bye against maybe wild cards and other low-seeded surfers.
I sense great things for Julian Wilson. I'll
That's
go
what
out.
Peter was saying.
I'll tell you this. I think Julian Wilson will be in the world title hunt this time next year. Mm-hmm. If barring injury, I think he gets underscored, and I think he got a raw deal this year. I don't know how many events it just seemed like he should have gotten through, and something miraculous happened for the other surfer at the end, or he didn't live up to his ability this year, and a lot of it wasn't his fault.
Yeah, he's an incredible surfer. Everybody knows that he should be a top five surfer.
Yeah,
I mean, I will point out at this Holly Eve event, what I love most about Julian is the bottom turn and the transitions between maneuvers. He does incredible maneuvers, of course, but when you watch the kid bottom turning, it's like there's never a hiccup or a step. Like even if there's a step in the wave and a chop, he drives through it with just so much power and he loads up so low against his board. He'll come out of a crazy maneuver with his feet kind of out of position. Normally you'll see somebody shuffle, do a check off the bottom, and then drive into a maneuver. He just comes out of that with his feet in a weird position, loads up low against his board, straight into a bottom turn, and just boom, like blows into the next turn.
It sort of brings up the conversation or the discussion about the final. You know, Dusty Payne had a wave where he did three or four incredible fins out gaff hooks in the wave. And got 9.7 and 9.0 or 9.6, whatever he got. Earlier in the heat, the beginning of the heat, Julian did one big gaff and then a big aerial and got like a 9.07 or something. And it put the judges in a weird place. And I guess my question to you is, do those four big gaffs on one wave that Dusty did, are those more than one big gaff and one pretty solid aerial? Like, is the aerial game getting downplayed?
I don't think so. I think that the judges scored it correctly, and it depends how gnarly were those gaffs that Dusty was
doing.
They
were insane. They were insane.
Versus how gnarly were the airs that Julian was doing. And I think that the judges got
it right.
But
aren't aerials way harder to do than...
Not really. I mean, yes and no. Like, if you have a soft section that's coming at you and you could just pop off the lip and land in a soft on a soft landing pad...
Yeah, I guess it's relative
versus where Dusty was approaching, which is like... bottom turning and he's going straight into this like bowling section and getting, you know, a 6'5" board on the rail and burying half the rail. Those things, the rail turn was harder than the soft air, you know? So it really just depends on degree of difficulty with each maneuver. Although what was great about that event or that final and that exchange was Julian had a subsequent wave where he did a massive tail blow, then like banked off a section and then did a massive alley-oop that he landed, but just kind of on the back of the wave and didn't get back into the wave. That would have arguably been the score. So it was like Julian got his two scores. Dusty came back, got his two scores. Now Julian had a chance to turn the heat again. And he was doing it.
Yeah.
And then on this huge
alley-oop,
didn't quite ride into the alley-oop, but it's like if he had done it, they probably would have given the score again. So I loved it. you know, both guys surfed incredibly.
Did you see that Adriano de Souza has a knee injury? He's out at Pipe, as well as Taj Burrow. Those two surfers out at Pipe. And CJ, questionable, I think.
Yeah, no, CJ said he's going to be in for it. Those guys already withdrew, so they're officially out. I think it's the first time that they've missed the Pipe event in like 9 years each. I think Taj may be longer than that. But really, yeah, interesting stuff. They're both going to requalify, so they're not in danger of that. But that opens the opportunity for some lower seed guys. I think Glenn Hall gets the call up for one of them.
And that poor guy.
Glenn Hall got the injury, bumped him out last year, and he's got to surf a couple events this year. So talk about a second and third chance. But that'll be interesting to see. Pipeline starts on December 8th. Which is going to be cool. And then Sunset event starts November 24th.
Here's the thing about Sunset and Pipeline when you talk about them in regards to competition. Everyone talks about a Pipeline specialist. Well, I would argue that you need to be more of a specialist at Sunset Beach. If you watch this final, and by the way, there's a lot of CT guys surfing in the QS this year.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You've got a lot of major players. How many of those guys are going to be in the Sunset Beach final? I would tell you that none of them are.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see, you know, Billy Kemper, Mason Ho, Poncho Sullivan, Miles Padaca, you know, Danny
Walsh.
Fuller. I mean, a million guys that will be in that Sunset Beach final that will decimate the CT guys. And so you hear all this talk about, oh, Pipe specialists, let us in because we're Pipeline specialists. Pipe, probably not that hard to surf if all you got to do is go over the ledge. Like, it's not like, you know, shifting peaks and you got to know the arena. These guys are good enough that, hey, yeah, it's 8 foot and it's a ledging tube. I just got to take off, pull in and come out. I'm obviously making it sound simpler than it is. But relative to Sunset Beach,
right,
I think it's an easier way. I think Pipe, you don't have to be as much of a specialist. And I think that will prove itself out. And it has in the past when you see these CT guys at the Vans World Cup at Sunset Beach. I think you'll see a Hawaiian specialist dominate that situation, much as you saw Hawaiian specialists dominate Haleiwa.
I fully agree. And it leads us to the conversation about the Pipe Trials, in which the ASP is introducing a new format this year. Did you study up or see that?
I do know a lot about it. There's been a lot of
controversy
regarding how it plays out. Basically, they've got 16 guys in a trials event.
Set the conversation for why it's controversial is that generally there's two wild cards let into an event. And in the past with the Pipeline Trials, people, the Hawaiians basically get pissed that not more surfers are let in because it's the pinnacle of surfing and they surf it all year long and, you know, all this stuff. And then the counterpart to that argument is like, it doesn't matter what you guys do all year long. This is the ASP. We have rules that apply across the world, including equally territorial places like Chopu, that we're not going to make any accommodations for you. Well, this year they're trying to accommodate the Pipeline specialists basically and the locals by introducing this new format. What's the format?
Well, and I don't want to stumble over the format, you know, generalities, but I believe it's 16 guys,
32
Hawaiian guys in this trials. What do they take? Four out of those, only the top two go to the main Pipeline event.
It's still going to be the top two. So the same number of wild cards in the main event, but they're allowing 32 surfers to compete in the trials event.
And they all get paid.
And
every single one of them cashes a check.
And it's $100,000 prize purse. So it's a huge amount of money to split between 32 guys.
Basically, I think the winner gets 50.
Yeah. So basically they're saying, hey, we're only going to let two of you in, but you're all going to make a good payday by either making it or not making it. You're going to get paid really well. It's a money consolation prize, basically.
Well, it's an interesting thing, and it has caused a lot of controversy, and it really goes back. I mean, some could tether this controversy way back to the early days of the IPS and even beyond that to, you know, some of the more hardcore conservatives in the surf world would say it's tied to the imperialistic tendencies of North America, USA, and coming over and taking Hawaii from the Hawaiians.
Right.
And there are those that, you know, will put their flag in the ground on that and say, hey, we're sick of it. You've been taking advantage of us. And they've been playing that narrative out for a long time.
Yeah.
And at some point, you know, you've got to let bygones be bygones. You just can't have reparations forever. You know, it's like, you know, you just can't bring the World Tennis Tour to your local tennis place and expect, you know, 32 really good tennis pros to be invited and get to play in it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious. I don't really know what my opinion on it is, but I'm curious what Hawaii, like the local contingent, these guys who are being led into this event, I'm wondering what their stance on it is. Because if their stance is, well, that's still not good enough. You know, we deserve to have 16 surfers in this event, which I think they had last year. They had 8 surfers
Yeah, they had 8 or 16, something like that.
It's like, okay, now you're being unreasonable. When we allowed 16 surfers in, you weren't happy. When we then decided that we would pay you for your time and you're using your space, you're still not happy. You know what I mean? It's like, well, now I don't know what else we can do to appease you guys, you know? And you guys is generalizing, and I don't think that there is one consensus opinion that comes out of the North Shore, but I don't know what else the ASP can do at this point.
It's all really quite fascinating, isn't it? Because, you know, behind it all is, I believe that there's probably a bunch of guys that are stoked to be in the trials and to cash a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And those same guys probably don't want to pipe up and say, hey, I'm pretty stoked.
Right.
Because they don't want to piss off others that maybe are trying to defend, you know, the local community's need to have more presence in the main event.
Right.
So I get the feeling that everyone's probably silently stoked.
Yeah.
That they're cashing a check, that they get a chance to be in the main event. All they got to do is go prove themselves like they've been asking to do. But again, I think that they're silently stoked. I think that they don't want to piss off the main protagonist in this whole deal.
Right. Yeah, interesting stuff. I hope that the waves are 10 to 12 feet and pumping through the event.
Yeah, I think we all do. That'll be cool. I know we're looking forward to it. You know, the interesting thing about the Hawaiian season, it feels like we've already gotten a huge chunk of Hawaii action.
I know.
From the HIC, which I watched a lot of at sunset, to the Haleiwa event, which was great, as we mentioned, to in between and on top of that, the Jaws experience. We had 2 days of Maui paddling at Jaws with Shane Dorian and Twiggy and all of those guys. You know, it feels like usually this sometimes certain seasons this time of year, we're going, God, I hope a swell shows up, you know, and we're already involved and people are surfing and it's on, you know, and it feels like it's on. And so we've got, you know, another month of excitement ahead of us.
Unrelated to Hawaii and ASP talk, did you hear about this new electromagnetic shark barrier that they're introducing?
No.
This is not a joke, dude.
I believe it.
Just outside Cape Town, South Africa, they're testing basically an electric shark barrier rather than a shark net.
Yeah.
The shark nets create problems because marine life gets tangled in it and dies.
Oh, and electric barriers aren't going to hurt any marine life?
No, actually. I'm glad that you asked. The idea is they're placing big, long cables on the bottom of the seafloor with strings of electrodes rising vertically towards the water's surface. Sharks are abnormally sensitive to electrical currents, especially at the pointy ends of their nose where they have these jelly-filled pores, which help them sense the electrical fields of fish. When a shark swims into the electrode, it'll give them an electric slap in the face enough to turn them around. Most other fish don't have the same sensitivity to electrical currents that sharks do, so they can brush up against the electrodes with no issues at all. Humans can reach out and grab hold of the electrodes if they want, and only a gentle electric tingle you'll feel. So it means no nets to harm the sharks, basically, and other marine life that normally get caught up and die in the nets.
I'm all for this. I think this is good. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
It's a brilliant.
I do too.
Brilliant idea.
I think it's good. Let's implement it around the world. I'm down.
Until the sharks develop some evolutionary adaptation to electrical current.
You know, I had a dog that had an electrical fence, right? And had a little collar. And every time it went through near the electrical fence, it shocked the dog. Well, eventually the dog figured it out and just like manned up and just bolted through the fence. And you know, before you know it, 3 weeks later, it started to like the feeling of getting a little shock.
Really?
So I'm a little skeptical, but I'm stoked that science is moving forward in some manner to try to protect you and I and the rest of the marine life as well.
I think that you should put that scientific research with you and your dog into a document and send it to these shark researchers.
Sure.
So they're well aware that sharks may
submit
adapt.
It to the Marine Life Journal.
You said the word marine. I've got a marine layer segue.
Okay.
Is marine layer dunzo is my question. Marine layer, of course, is Dane Reynolds' personal blog.
Who?
He was doing this, this mini series that I told you about with him and his filmer Mini.
Mini.
It was a 3-part series kind of documenting their rise to fame in the surf video world. In part 3 of that video series, Dane straight out comes and says that he's quitting Marine Layer, basically.
Wow.
They're not going to produce videos anymore for Marine Layer.
What's that all about? What's behind that?
He said basically it's the end of an era. He's like that era where surfers blogs basically that they curate on their own and make web clips that you spend a day filming and put it up that night. He's like, that era is kind of over, and we were thrilled to be a part of it. But just like, you know, Taylor Steele's era of spending 2 years to create a 2-minute video part existed in the 90s. This was something that existed in the 2000s, but he's like, it's kind of run its course and I don't feel a need to do it anymore. Hmm. And so he's like, I'm going to move on to something else.
No, he was the sort of the gatekeeper to when eras begin and end.
I think he's just acknowledging it. I don't think that he's...
Do you feel that way?
I do, that it's over.
Yeah. Do you feel like the era of watching surf video clips is over?
Not the era of watching surf video clips. The era of producing it this morning, taking all your waves from one session and then releasing it at night, I think that is over. I think the market's been saturated with 2 to 3 minute video clips. I don't have time to see your 20 best waves from this morning. I do have time to watch your 20 best waves of the last year. You know what I mean?
So we're going back to the old model.
But the old model was in a 45 minute video. You know, maybe the new model is accumulate those clips and put it out for free in a 2-minute video.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Sure.
I'm wondering if Dane, you know, where I think that his kind of mentality was to be a little bit of a recluse in the last year or so. He hasn't been posting on Marine Layer. It's like, I'll be a little bit of a recluse and only produce clips every once in a while. But if you do that and then your best clips can't compete with what John did in the last 3 contests in the last 3 months, then it kind of negates your relevance.
Yeah. I would agree that somebody maybe got into Dane's head and said, dude, it doesn't take long to be forgotten around here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not long at all.
Right.
And oh, by the way, your company's hurting.
And they're paying you $4 million a year.
And what are you doing?
Right.
You're not on tour. No one's watching you. No one knows where you're at. You know, and you show up in these little video clips in Ventura. Mm-hmm. Well, it was good for a couple of years, but you're right. It is over. And not because you said so, but because we said so.
Right. And when you watch the airs that Felipe did in the Brazil QS event that just ended, which are better than, I mean, lots that we've seen Dane do, and then you watch the power surfing that guys are doing at the Holly Eve event, there's no need for Dane. You know, it's like Dane.
I have not missed Dane Reynolds at all. And believe me, I love watching Dane Reynolds surf. I think he has one of, if not the best style.
Oh, of course.
Just got that classic California style. I haven't missed it.
That's the thing. We want Dane to come and be Dane, but we haven't missed it when he's not there. So that creates a dilemma for
him. And it's not going to take me long to go, you know what? Oh, well, you know, like, no, I'm going to watch Dusty Payne. I'm more excited about Dusty Payne right now.
Oh, totally.
Those clips with him and Julian in Swamp Ducks.
Yeah.
That was pretty top notch stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, there's a million guys that can, I'm exaggerating. There's quite a few guys that are red hot that I'll watch and be stoked. I mean, I can watch Craig Anderson, Clay Marzo, Dusty Payne, Julian Wilson. I don't really need Dane Reynolds to be excited to go surfing. Now, I'm not saying I don't want to see it. I do, but there's plenty of other guys that'll fill your shoes.
I think you saw it because you reposted it on social media. John's backside air that he does.
That was insane.
Attractive Destruction, I think. Or Attractive Distraction is the name of the movie. The guys on Maui put this movie out, like Albie Layer and Matt Miola, Kai Barger, all those dudes. Hank Gaskell's got a part, Tori Meister. And they've got some footage of John Florence, and he does this one backside air just at like the beach park or something, small, waist high, knee high left. But he does this backside air where his board comes completely detached from his feet.
And he's upside down.
He's upside
at that
down
point.
And spread out. He looks like one of those. I don't know who's the green guy.
Gumby.
Yeah, he looks like Gumby, or he looks like a Wilbur Kuckmeyer toy or something. He's just completely spread out.
It's a flyaway. It looks like a flyaway.
It's a wipeout.
If you take the screenshot, it is clearly a wipeout / flyaway, where he just hit the end section and kicked his board out. His board is a foot away from his feet.
Yeah. And one foot's on the nose, one foot's like dangling by his leg, you know, like it's.
But he stomps it.
He makes it.
He stomps it. And he's upside down at that moment that we're talking about.
And it seems
insane.
Like the bit that I put on Facebook, John Pizell had put up.
Right.
And it looked like they were doing the edit and they're like, Pizell's got to see this. And they sent it to Pizell and they're like, you can put this up, but don't put anything else up.
It's not true.
Oh, it's
the
out
video,
there.
The video's out there. Okay. It's available to download. So Pizell was watching it and then just filmed the screen with his iPhone.
Right.
But I mean, it's the whole video is incredible, but that one air alone, it's
Dane
like,
who?
Insane. Exactly my point. Did you hear about Chris Davidson being busted for his DUI?
Yeah.
I want to talk about that for a moment. Chris Davidson is a really great surfer who was on the CT a couple of times. Scott's shaking his head going, really great. What the heck?
No, I mean, everyone's a really great surfer.
Of course. That's why we're talking about it.
Okay, go ahead.
But he basically wrapped his mom's car around a tree in New South Wales, and a resident found him unconscious in the driver's seat. The accident caused serious damage to ligaments in his neck. He still can't move his right arm. This happened on October 1st. And 8 years ago, he actually got a DUI and had his license banned for 10 years. So that ban isn't even over, which means he was driving unlicensed at the time, which also means he'll likely face prison time for this current incident. This is really sad. Of course, you never want to see people endanger other people's lives, which Davo has done a number of times. Davo's known for partying when he was on tour, and that's why he was never able to maintain sponsorship and maintain his position on tour. Everybody knew he was a great surfer. It's tough to see him struggle with stuff like this. Before I get into my points, what are your thoughts on Davo?
My feeling is he probably should do some prison times, probably be the best thing for him. What Davo needs to do is get to a bottom, a place where he's desperate to get help. Sometimes prison does that to a guy.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what Davo's bottom is going to be. Maybe he has to go kill somebody. I don't know. But until he reaches his bottom, he's not going to get himself help. And he's the only guy that needs to get himself help. He's not a bad guy. He's a sick guy trying to get better.
Right.
We hope he's trying to get better.
Well, he is. If he's kind of moved back home, living with his mom, apparently
driving
his
drunk
mom's car.
Yeah.
Driving
so
his
so
mom's
that
car.
Didn't work.
Yeah.
So we, you know, I think prison time would probably be a good idea. Just because I want to see him reach his bottom. If he can reach his bottom before then, in some other manner, then let's not send him to jail. But
I remember
how many chances do you get?
When I was a kid, I remember like 16. I was really just kind of getting into surfing, and one of my magazines, Surfer or Surfer, came in the mail, and I was flipping through it, and they were covering the Bells event, which had happened, you know, probably 2 months prior. But Kelly Slater had been beaten in the event by Chris Davidson, and I was just like, and he was 18 years old at the time, and I was like, who's Chris Davidson? That's insane that this no-name guy beat Kelly Slater. That was the first time I saw anything about him. And then a couple years ago, I was at the Lowers event, and it was the morning of the final, and I think they were starting that day with the quarterfinal, and the first heat of the day was Andy Irons versus Chris Davidson, and the waves were pumping. It was like all-time lowers.
I remember that heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all-time lowers, like slight offshore breeze, well overhead, pumping. And, you know, it's rolling around to 8 o'clock, and word on the beach is Davo hasn't shown up yet. He's supposed to surf against Andy. And Andy's out in the water warming up, tearing it up. And ultimately, Davo missed his heat. And somebody called him, and, oh, he's still at the hotel and he's really sick and he can't make it out of bed. Well, the real story was he had been out partying the night before, so much so he couldn't make it to his, you know, and he was on to his 8 a.m. quarterfinal heat against Andy, but he was on kind of the bubble like he always was, where it's like, oh, he needs results. Well, dude, you're in the quarters and you're not showing up for your heat, so that's no good. My question, and kind of the reason I bring it up, is we see this oftentimes. We saw it with Andy Irons, where there's this kind of erratic behavior, but my question is just, does that erratic behavior lend itself towards prolific surfing?
No.
It doesn't?
No. Erratic behavior, staying out late and getting drunk, does it make you a better surfer? I mean, look at Kelly Slater.
Well, I'm not saying that it requires erratic behavior to be a great surfer. I'm just saying the impulse that fueled Van Gogh to cut off his ear and mail it to a prostitute may be the same impulse that created and inspired Starry Night. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. You know, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I don't think there's anything that can, that you can use to condone.
No, of course.
Condone crazy behavior. Like there's no rationalization here. You know, like, if you know what's really crazy, not getting drunk. like if you're that guy, what's really crazy is not getting drunk.
Right.
Now
if
you're,
that's your impulse to
that's,
do it.
Yeah. Now be real. Right. Yeah. Like that's what's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Show me how crazy you are. Just be normal for a day.
Yeah. The amount of strength that it would take to fight the impulse would kind of bolster you and prepare you to meet those challenges in that semi or quarterfinal against Andy Irons, you know?
Sounds to me like he could be, he could have alcoholism.
That's a good possibility. In the face of adverse consequence, when you continue drinking, I think that might be the definition. Yeah. Do you want to talk about Kelly Slater's new business arrangement?
Sure. You know, yeah, it looks like he's going to be using Volcom and Electric and sort of, it was an interesting little Instagram, wasn't it? Because here's a photo of him with the Kering Group, this massive corporation that has subsidiaries that include Volcom and Electric and all of these brands.
And a lot of high fashion brands.
And Kelly's basically going to be slapping all those logos on his boards and sort of...
He didn't say anything
about
logos.
Well, my point is that he went out of his way to say, I'm working with Volcom and Electric. And so that's the shit he's going to be wearing.
Well, we already knew that...
Until the Outer Known brand becomes... Yeah. I think they're slowing down. They're like, let's wait. Let's see what...
So the news is we all knew that Kelly was going to be partnering with the Kering Group to help launch Outer Known. He posted an Instagram recently revealing a little bit more information. And that little bit of more information is that while we're establishing Outer Known, I'm going to be partnering with these other brands as a brand ambassador. Now, what's unique about this is that it's not just one of those brands.
Yeah, it's Adidas Puma Golf, right?
Adidas Puma or Cobra Puma Golf.
Cobra Puma Golf.
And then
Electric
Volcom. For sunglasses. Volcom for surf clothing. He's going to be helping them develop surf-specific clothes, was the quote. But then also, he said he's going to be partnering with Brioni and Balenciaga and Stella McCartney, which are all luxury couture brands, which I think is revolutionary for surfing. It's like we now have a professional surfer who's basically sponsored by Balenciaga. So when he shows up at the ASP awards ceremony at the end of the year, and maybe the surfer poll, is this guy going to be wearing, you know, a $10,000 suit?
I think
to that
he will.
Event?
You know, the thing about Kelly is he's a lot like Laird and other star athletes that they transcend their sport. Like Kelly has transcended the sport. So he doesn't need the sport. The sport needs him. So Kelly gets asked on stage to play with Pearl Jam, and he gets asked to go to, you know, the Grand Prix in Monaco. Or he's just everywhere, you know, and so he'll put on the hat that's appropriate at that spot. And, you know, if he's going to go down and be like, show up at a Volcom QS event at Pine Trees in Kauai, he's probably going to wear Volcom stuff, you know. And
he has been throughout this year.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just so he has the opportunity now to wear whatever he wants, based on what's appropriate at the time. If he's at the Pebble Beach, he's going to wear the Cobra Puma Golf stuff.
But this is an official endorsement now.
Yeah, no,
this
it's great.
This is him saying,
great.
I'm officially being a brand ambassador to these things, which I think is rad.
Well, what's interesting is what about Outer Known? Like, is this up until we get this brand developed?
He said while establishing Outer Known was his exact quote.
So they had a meeting where they're like, look, you know, we're not going to really have anything for you to wear. We're not going to have any stickers or whatever. We don't have the package produced yet. We're not ready to go to market until we are, since we're all part of this. And Richard Wolcott and Kelly are very tight.
Right.
Let's just, you know, these are all our brands. Let's just embrace all of it. And that's sort of what he's come out and said he's going
to
do.
It'll be interesting to see what he does do in terms of stickers on his board.
Yeah.
Or if nothing at all, you know, maybe.
I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, you think Dusty Payne, okay, like who moves product for Volcom?
This conversation again?
Well, yeah, why not? Because that's what it all comes down
to. Sure.
Who moves product for Volcom? Well, if Kelly Slater puts a sticker on his board, a Volcom sticker, guess who's moving product for Volcom?
Kelly
Slater is.
For sure.
And I don't know who else rides for Volcom besides that makes that moves product.
Nobody on the CT rides for Volcom.
And does Alex Gray move product?
Mitch Colburn, maybe?
No. I don't think so. I don't think my kid goes, let's go get
Your Volcom. Kid doesn't, but in Australia, I'm sure.
Oh, maybe in Australia. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just talking North America.
All of the Kai Neville junkies love him, man.
I will say this, though, that if Kelly puts a Volcom sticker on his board, I guarantee you my son's going to be like, I love Volcom. I'm so stoked for Kelly.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Right. What if he puts a Stella McCartney sticker on his board? Does Stella McCartney make
My
stickers?
Son's going to be like, get me some Stella McCartney crap.
Is that Paul McCartney's sister?
I don't know. I thought it was like a bubbled water. Like, wasn't it bubble water, Stella McCartney?
I have no idea, nor Stella do I care. Or
it's
will
probably
ever
luggage
anything.
Or facial care. Who knows? Cares?
Yeah. You got must-see moments, Dukes?
I do. My must-see moment is there's a clip of Chippa Wilson riding this incredible Greenbush barrel that's just mind-blowingly deep and fast and incredible, and the movie's called Loco Loco. You can find it on the Tracks Mag website, and of course we'll put it on surfsplendorpodcast.com, and it'll also be downthelineradio.com. But Loco Loco, have you seen this clip?
I saw it.
It's pretty insane.
It's incredible.
Pretty mind-blowing.
Well, Greenbush is gnarly, like so gnarly anyways, yes. But that is one of the better Greenbush barrels.
It's insane. So that and Ola's 10-point ride at Hale Iwa.
Oh, yeah.
Those are my two must-see moments.
I don't know who it was I was talking to about the Globe video that came out recently. Why are you shaking your head again? I wish that we had a video on you so that people could see your kind of mannerisms
Globe.
Throughout the show. As soon as I
Is
start
Globe
talking.
Even around? Is Globe
yes,
even
remember up? Strange Rumblings in Shangri-La, the movie that just came out this year that's incredible?
I just don't see a lot of Globe around. That's
well,
all.
Well, you're not looking hard enough. Okay, anyways, they did a solid segment at Greenbush, but somebody was telling me the day before they shot that segment, Damien Hobgood was meeting up with them. They miscommunicated in their...
Due to the concussion. Oh, no, that's CJ.
No. They miscommunicated where they were going to surf that day. So Damo was coming from one spot on one boat, and they were going to go surf somewhere. He miscommunicated and ended up going to Greenbush when the camera crew went somewhere else. Yeah. And the word is Damo got the best Greenbush the day by himself and surfed better than anybody's ever surfed Greenbush and like got unbelievable waves. The next day, they all went back there together, and Damo put together, you know, an incredible Greenbush section, better than anybody else in the movie. But it was like a couple feet smaller and not quite as good as the day before. So the footage that doesn't exist of Damo at Greenbush is
I you know what? I see him occasionally where I surf, and I'll ask him about it. That's an interesting thing.
Yeah,
I'll try to get
curious.
Some more insight there.
My must-see moment is Dusty Payne's section in Lost Atlas, which is 5 years old at this point, but
what?
But it's relevant because he just won the Reef Hawaiian Pro.
Sean Thompson freeride must see moment.
Dude, if you've seen Dusty Payne in Lost Atlas, you would not be surprised by his performance.
I've never doubted his ability.
I mean, it's a segment that Dane Reynolds and Jordy Smith all claim like they watch for inspiration. It was just unbelievable. It was down in Mexico. And I'll try to find it. I have a feeling it probably exists on YouTube. I'll try to find it and then post it.
I'd like to see it.
It's well worth watching. I mean,
Is it down at Salina Cruz, those right-hand tubes?
Cool. It's like if you put together that segment today, it would be, you know, the best segment of the year. And it's 5 years old. Duke and Coop.
You know, I don't have either of those.
I have a Duke. Okay. And my Duke is Olamana Eliogram. You just mentioned his 10-point ride. Yes. I love Olamana Eliogram. The kid never gets a break, and he surfs so incredibly well. And I think I talked about a wave on this show a while ago that he got at Sunset Beach last year, where he gets this insane barrel, gets spit out, and in the whitewash, like his eyes are still kind of covered. Right when he comes out, the jet ski is on the shoulder with the sled behind the jet ski, and it's in his way. So he gets spit out of this wave, and the sled's right in front of him, and he ollies over it. Like while he's washing the water out of his face, sees it at the last second and then ollies the sled. And it's like, holy crap. And he got a 10 for that wave too. You only ever see Ola in Hawaii, and he puts on these incredible performances. And then last year at Pipe, broke his leg in the event at Pipe, but it's like he surfs so well and then gets sidelined by something like that. In this event, the Reef Hawaiian Pro, he got sidelined because he got an interference. But in the heat that he got an interference, he got a 10-point ride. So he lost the heat with 10 points out of 10 possible points.
Yeah.
He's just unbelievable.
Yeah. And I saw the interview with him afterwards, and he seems like a really cool together guy.
He's amazing. He's from Hana, so it's like out in the outskirts of Maui.
Well, they brought up an interesting point, the commentators of the webcast, about how the Maui crew is sort of the new crew.
Oh, yeah.
Relative to, like, there was that Kauai contingent when Bruce and Andy showed up, and there was guys like Evan Valier and some other guys from Kauai that sort of, and now it's like this Maui crew is just insane. You know, really, like, are. Tori, is Meister from there?
No, he's from the Big Island.
So, you know, you've got these guys. I'm going to be at a loss to name them all, but quite a few guys. Billy Kemper, right?
Yep.
And
Ian Walsh,
Ian
Clay
Marzo,
Albie Layer, Albie. Matt Biola, Kai Barger.
There you go. You just nailed it. So though that crew is sort of owning the islands, or at least they're representing the islands the best.
What's amazing is they've always been here. It's like they've been doing it for 5 years now, and for some reason now we're finally giving them their due.
Yeah, they sort of got lost in the wash or something, you know.
Yeah. And,
because they never really represented themselves as this like factor either. You know,
so.
Like it was like before there was like this Kauai wolf pack, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And the Maui guys have always just been kind of independent of each other almost.
Well, this movie that we talked about with John John's Air, Attractive Distraction, is well worth the $10 or whatever it is on iTunes. Definitely check it out. It showcases all those guys. But for me, Ola's my Duke because the kid just shows up and blows up every year. He also married Monica Byrne Wiki a couple years ago.
You're kidding. That kid's married? How old is he?
Dude, have you seen Monica?
But how old is Ola? I thought he was like 20.
They're in their mid-20s. But Monica is like incredible. And she was on the pro. She was doing the tour for a while.
Yeah, yeah, I've
but
seen
she's
her.
A
Everyone's
knockout.
Seen her, yeah.
Yeah, she's incredible. So Monica Eliogram is her new last
wow.
name. But
oh,
yeah, great couple.
Cool.
Love them. Kauai or Maui Power.
Wow.
I don't have a Duke. I don't have a feel need to be negative today, and there
a
was kook. Nothing that jumped
you
out.
You don't have a kook.
I don't have a kook. I'm sorry.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I think that about does it. I mean, we've talked a lot of pro surfing. We apologize if pro surfing is not your gig, but this season, what's happening now, it's sort of the stuff to rap about short of some massive California swell that hasn't happened. So
all we care about is Hawaii and California.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in the next month, and we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk some more about surfing in and around the world. Until next time.
Yeah, David Scales, by the way, is my name with Surf Splendor Podcast. You are Scott Bass with DownTheLineRadio.com.
Right, Scott at SurfTalkSanDiego.com,
right.
And hello at SurfSplendorPodcast.com. And if you want to check out BoardroomShow.com, that's where all the boardroom stuff is taking place, and I've been putting up some videos and stuff there.
Let's hear some Neil Young, dude.
Okay, until next time, adios and aloha.
I wanna live with a cinnamon girl. I can be happy the rest of my life with a cinnamon girl.
Right on. Thank you, everybody, for listening to today's show. And, of course, early next week, we will be publishing the episode with surf photographer Todd Glazer. I mean, the guy's at the top of his game right now. So definitely tune back in on Monday, Tuesday next week to listen to that, either on our website or wherever you normally download podcasts. iTunes, Stitcher are the apps that people, that most people seem to use. And if you listen in either of those apps, we always ask that you just rate and review the show. That helps other people to find the show. And of course, I know it's redundant if you listen to this show every week, but it is crucial information. And that is just simply that you share this show with friends. We produce all the content. Hopefully, this content has value to you. And if you'd like to see it grow, you can just invest in the show's future by passing the word to others about the show. We don't advertise in any way. And in order to ensure that we're able to snag big guests like Peter King and Todd Glazer, you know, we need to have an audience for them to share whatever it is that they're promoting, their work. So if you can do your part by sharing, we will continue to do our part by producing the content. All right. So thanks for doing that. You can do it on social media, where you can find us at Surf Splendor, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And, If you like the music, this Neil Young track, you know, or anything that you've heard in any episode of Surf Splendor, it's all available on surfsplendorpodcast.com, along with all the videos and photos and links to articles that we discussed in today's show. So definitely check that out. You can just share the URL from today's episode with people. And I think that is all she wrote. So I hope that you enjoy the next week, and I hope that you score a couple of good waves in the meantime. And until then, we will be back next week with an all-new episode. This is David Scales saying ciao.